This is Fenton Dunn, and you're very welcome. No corporate candy floss news, no political spin. Truth Radio by Internet. Here, the expression is still free.
Whole world's broke, ain't worth fixing. It's time to start all over, make a new beginning.
You're on the inside track from breakfornews.com. It's Wednesday, 21st of October at 9 p.m. Eastern, and you're very welcome to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, sponsored by neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. Check it out at neemwell.com, and remember, your purchases there help support this broadcast. Or email Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at neemwell.com. Now, tonight we've got a number of topics in the show. Renewed concerns about a draft, with some saying that it's not so much a draft coming in as a creeping draft coming in over the next few years. We'll have a report, and we'll also bring you details of a new series which began last night in the United Kingdom on BBC Television, Power of Nightmares Part 1. The new series by award-winning filmmaker Adam Curtis says it aims to undermine the assertions made in the War on Terror. And we'll also be checking out the dirty tricks of Karl Rove and his secret plan to re-engineer American society. And we'll have music from Wolf Creek Session, their CD Between Two Shores, and tracks also from Hail Caesar, the stunning debut album by Joe Dunn. And your emails to the show. All that's coming up after latest developments. And the increasingly tense election battle in the United States for the presidency has taken a disturbing turn. You may have heard that Margaret Hassan, a British-Irish aid worker, was snatched by kidnappers in the last couple of days. Today, her husband pleaded for her release, saying that she's not involved in politics or religion. Margaret Hassan was director of the Australian branch of CARE in Iraq, an aid agency, and she was shown on Al Jazeera television yesterday, looking shaken and alarmed. And what's all that got to do with the election in the United States? Well, if you haven't twigged that the kidnappings and beheadings in Iraq are related to electioneering, essentially, in the United States election, then you need to wake up and smell the roses. It's a despicable game being played here to divert people's attention away from what's happening to the Iraqi people as US and British forces continue strong military actions in the region. Every time it looks as if international sympathy may be about to move towards what's happening to the Iraqi people, there's another beheading, and by these methods, the international community is turned against the Iraqi people. And with the US presidency at stake, there's every possibility that we are about to be treated to the beheading of the first female hostage in Iraq. Now, if you've heard our previous broadcast, you'll be aware that we brought evidence which has been printed in some mainstream media outlets, the Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom, for example, and that evidence indicates that the culprits behind the hostage taking in Iraq are by no means clear and straightforward. Anyhow, this deeply cynical game to manipulate public opinion continues to be played out, and it's succeeding among those who haven't realized that the Iraqi resistance is not stupid enough to destroy its international credibility by engaging in hostage-taking and beheading. Meanwhile, more stage-managed political controversy in relation to the war in Iraq, as the UK Defence Secretary Geoff Hoon authorized the movement of around 850 British troops from Basra in the south up to near Baghdad, where of course they'll be much more in the line of fire. The ostensible reason for moving the troops is that the United States needs additional troops in order to continue to mount its offensive on the Fallujah area. Once again, don't believe the spin you read in the newspapers on this issue. It's highly questionable, it has to be said, why the United States, with 130,000 troops in Iraq, is so desperately in need of 850 British soldiers to assist it. But the real reason underlying all this is that it's designed to show a united front been taken by the British and American governments in the face of the animalistic behaviour as it's being now portrayed by the Iraqi resistance. And all of that is designed to take your eye off the ball and prevent you having sympathy for what's happening, for example, in Fallujah, where that continuing US assault has led to the death of an entire family. A witness following an airstrike in Fallujah saw a man and woman, four children, two boys and two girls, being pulled from the rubble of their home. Yet another so-called precision strike by US forces. Yes, that's right, the US military are firmly denying that a family of six was killed, saying it launched four strikes against safe houses used by Zarqawi's fighters in the city of Fallujah. They hit a restaurant, which they did. The most popular restaurant in Fallujah was struck in the last few days. And once again, that's a strike against Zarqawi. And who's claiming responsibility for the beheadings? Zarqawi. So you see, the United States is not killing civilians in Fallujah. It's killing terrorists who behead people. But you shouldn't be hearing that analysis just on breakfornews.com. You should be hearing that from responsible journalists in the news media, because you don't have to be very smart to work out what's going on, and those in the international media are in a position to report the truth. But what they're doing is they're allowing war propaganda to be reported as fact, and that's enabling the continuing kidnapping and beheading of innocent victims in Iraq, and it's enabling the continuing attacks on civilian targets in Iraq. So the international media bear a very heavy responsibility for their failure to call propaganda propaganda. This is wartime. In wartime you get propaganda, but the international media is blind to that, it seems. And if this dereliction of duty by the media continues, then, in the words of Bob Dylan, it's certainly a hard rain's gonna fall, because it's a clear campaign to recruit the sympathies of the vast numbers of people who watch TV and believe what they see there. And in that context, you probably remember the biblical prophecy, they shall beat their swords into plowshares. Well, I suppose they will eventually. It's a question of how many are going to have to die in the meantime. But that's the theme of the first track tonight. And it comes from Joe Dunn. No, the name's not a coincidence. That's my brother Joe. He and his wife Bernie just had their first baby girl, by the way. And this track from his first CD, Hail Caesar. And it's a clear anti-war message. Here's Joe Dunn with The Plow. You're on the Inside Track on Break for News, and I'll be right back with the story of the creeping draft.
There's a man who stays, he's plowing up the field. Left his guns behind him, he don't need no war no more. We'll be right back.
And you're very welcome back to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com. And that's Joe Dunn there with The Plough from the CD Hail Caesar. And you can get more details on that at singdejablue.com. singdejablue.com. Now, we've had the controversy over whether there's going to be a draft or not, and many have regarded it as merely a political issue being kicked back and forward between the two candidates for the presidency. But over the last 24 hours or so, there's been a new twist to that story as details of a new kind of draft have come out. The first development in all of that hitting the media, Paul Krugman, writing in the New York Times, poured cold water on George Bush's denials of a draft. He says the realities are that commanders in Iraq need more troops, but there's no more troops to send, and the manpower shortage means that some kind of draft is definitely coming down the pipe. Then yesterday, Dave Lindorf on Counterpunch.org laid it all out for us. He says the cat's out of the bag. First they're coming for the nurses and the doctors, and then they're coming for you. Lindorf says, we've already got a backdoor draft with the reservist and National Guard troops forced to do double tours of duty in Iraq and stop-loss orders that bar troops from leaving the military when their enlistments are up. And he says that backdoor draft is going to get even worse. Pentagon's considering a draft call-up of health professionals because of a shortage of doctors, nurses and medics in the US military. So who could be against that? Who could be against doctors and nurses helping out to make sure that our boys in Iraq have the medical backup they need? Exactly, says Lindorf, it's an unstoppable political momentum. But the problem is, according to Lindorf, it's unlikely to stop with just doctors or nurses. He says you can rely on any legislation being framed in such a way that it's left to the Pentagon and the Selective Service System to make the determination of where the key shortages arise, perhaps mechanics or electronic experts or pilots, etc. And so we go on and on with the draft slowly extending to more and more subgroups, and before you know it, hey, there's shortages of just about everybody. Now, US voters were quite surprised that although Gore had won the popular vote, he nevertheless lost the presidency. And there's every indication that such an event could take place again, especially if Karl Rove is involved. A new article in the Atlantic Monthly magazine this month by Joshua Green charts the career of Karl Rove, and he's certainly some operator. Let me take a moment to describe the ways in which he's manipulating public opinion. And let me just preface remarks on the issue by saying that in no way am I alleging that Karl Rove has anything to do with the beheadings of hostages in Iraq and the tactic which has been deployed to portray the conflict in Iraq in a particular light. That would be a baseless allegation, as there's absolutely no evidence for that, and therefore I'm not making that allegation. But let's take a look at the style of this guy Rove, and I think a tactic which he uses, and which is a political tactic commonly used now, is to make sure that elections are fought on emotional issues which have nothing whatsoever to do with policies. You'll be well aware, for example, of the flip-flop allegation against John Kerry. And John Deardorff, who is Rove's media consultant for races in Texas and Alabama, says, "This rap Bush has of never changing his mind and never admitting a mistake, that's Karl. That's where it comes from." Well, some of you might be scratching your heads and wondering what's going on, because it can be portrayed as a liability of George Bush that he doesn't admit to mistakes. But if you're thinking along those lines, then you're thinking in terms of politics and rationality. And this has got nothing to do with either politics or rationality. It's got to do with emotion, and in particular, it's got to do with women's liberation. See, Karl is portraying George W. Bush as a classic old-style male. He knows what he thinks, he doesn't change his mind, he's inflexible, and Karl is portraying those as being attributes, advantages, because he's betting the shop that at heart there is a fundamental resistance in the psyche of American males against the so-called new man and against liberalism. So he's pushing key buttons by deliberately portraying George Bush as an old-style guy. Now, how do you know I'm right about that? You know, because in the last couple of days, we've had high-profile comments by Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is a very close supporter of the Bush administration, saying that his stance supporting George W. Bush cost him 2 weeks of no sex. And it sounds like a story against Schwarzenegger, and the story is that his wife was so upset that for 2 weeks he didn't have any sex. But, you know, then eventually she relented. Well, the subtle message coming across in that tale being told by Schwarzenegger is once again an old-style man tale. That is, if you take a principled stand on a principled issue, well, yes, the little woman may kick up for a while, but eventually she will relent and you get your way. So, it's quite sophisticated the way this is being marketed at people, and there's very little commentary on this in mainstream media. But I bet you one thing, I bet you Karl Rove has had his people out checking with opinion polls to determine how men feel about the women's liberation issue. And you can bet your bottom dollar that he's uncovered a significant segment of the male population which this kick-ass cowboy hat psychology appeals, and he's marketing George Bush heavily at them. This guy is not stupid, that's for sure. And he's particularly clever about the use of words. For example, in the Alabama race, Rove had his candidates there call themselves, when asked about their general approach to politics, they called themselves strict constructionists. That was a term designed to appeal to conservative opinion, strict constructionist. But one of the trigger words being used there was strict, once again appealing to the harsh, inflexible, domineering, old-style male archetype pre-women's liberation. I've also noticed that Republican propagandists are positioning themselves in the men's movement, and so all of this has clear implications for women in the United States. The strategists led by Rove in the Republican Party are determined to remold American politics, and they're appealing to the strict old-style males in the Christian conservative right wing, while they're simultaneously beginning to mobilize support in liberal male opinion. There's every sign that Republican strategists intend to recast the American psyche. And what you're seeing played out in the field of presidential politics is firmly based in familial politics. Rove and the Republicans want us to return to the kind of certainties which predominated, for example, back around the time of World War II, back when men were men and women were glad of it. And the tactic is to use terrorist atrocity to scare the hell out of women, and then to, as I say, engineer a return to old-style certainty, the kind of certainty which led to millions of war casualties and which kept women in a Stepford Wives box. Karl Rove is building a Let's Roll society, and the Republican strategists are engaged in social engineering on a massive scale. Now, let's just take a break from that harsh vista and turn to a more lyrical one. And I'm talking about the CD Between Two Shores from the Wolf Creek Session, listeners to the show, and thanks very much, guys and girls, for the CD. And you're going to hear from Keith and Joan, vocals and guitar, Alice Fleischman and Mike Broderick, and their version of Buddy Monlock's beautiful song, Appalachian Rain. You're on the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, and I'll be right back.
Heading out on this journey, I packed up my regret. Now I'm sitting in the shelter, seems I don't have many left. But I'm writing you this letter on this rainy April day. You said your heart needed some distance, so I walked away. I would gladly walk from Georgia all the way to Maine. I would cross the creeks and the mountain peaks, whispering your name. If you asked me, I would do this. I would go and not complain. But this walks for me to find my peace. The Appalachian Rain. Walking out on the Blue Ridge, I pulled a pebble from my shoe, threw it down into the valley, and I sat and thought of you. I wish it all could be that easy to just let go of all the pain, but it's not, so I'll keep walking in the Appalachian rain. I would gladly walk from Georgia all the way to Maine. I would cross the creeks and the mountain peaks whispering your name. If you ask me, I would do this. I would go not complain, but this walks for me to find my peace in the Appalachian rain. You can meet me at Guitar on that clear September day. If you're not there,
you're very welcome back to the Inside Track on breakfornews.com, and you can check out more about Wolf Creek Session at the website. That's www.fallingmountain.com. And we'll be bringing you some more tracks from that great CD, Between Two Shores. And I really do appreciate your emails to Fintan, F-I-N-T-A-N, at breakfornews.com. Only thing is, I still haven't got the time to answer emails, which is very frustrating for me because I'd love to do so. However, let's just cover some emails recently from Adrian, who says, love the radio show and the new photo makes you no longer look like Phileas Fogg. I didn't know I did, but he thinks that's progress. And he thinks the interview with Daniel Hopsicker, which I did just recently, was very interesting. It uncovered GCN malfeasance. Well, what he's talking about there is links which Dan Hopsicker drew out between international arms dealer Adnan Khashoggi and between a whole host of companies with Genesis in the title, including the Genesis Communications Network. Of course, Genesis Communications is the media vehicle through which you hear from Dave Von Kleist, who produced the video In Plain Sight, and also the legendary Alex Jones. And Infowars.com is brought to you on Genesis Communications Network. And Adrian wonders, where's Alex Jones on this allegation? And that's a very good question. I don't know, Adrian, where Alex Jones is on this allegation. The interesting thing is the huge controversy this has stirred up. Not. In other words, none. And that just shows you the degree of control which there is over the so-called alternative media. That Dan Hopsicker makes such a damning allegation against Dave Von Kleist and Alex Jones, and it just seems to sort of drop down the memory hole. Anyway, that's probably why you're listening here on Break for News, where the expression is still free. And Sherry was also on. I'll give Sherry's full name. We don't usually give out the full name. If you write in, we'll just use a first name. But Sherry is Sherry Nakeen, and she's a great health reporter. She listened to the interview with John Rappaport on the subject of the flu scam, and she says a great interview, and she looks forward to getting more. And she's going to send that link out to all of her list. And Florentin was in touch as well on the issue of cell phones frying your brain. You can check that out on the homepage of breakfornews.com at the moment. And he says he took on board the kind of concerns that we raised in the show, and until there's country information, he's only going to use cell phones for emergencies. That's a good move. And he sends me a link to an article which appeared in nature.com just a few days after we did that show. Mobile phone risk revealed: long-term phone use doubles the occurrence of rare brain tumours. And Florentin comments, well, if it appeared in Nature, then it's damn serious. It sure is. Although that's only the tip of the iceberg of the risk of mobile phones. As we pointed out in that show, it's the effect on the blood-brain barrier which is of the most concern. And Dwight's been on with a problem listening to the show. Every time he tries to listen, it loads incompletely. Only thing I can suggest to you, Dwight, or to anybody else having listening problems with the streaming, is to download a zipped version of the file, and then you can listen offline. And James has been in touch to comment on the depleted uranium show we just did. He writes that although he was aware in general terms of what's being done, I was not aware of the full horror that your program is helping to expose. There's a growing body of medical evidence that the so-called Gulf War syndrome from the first Gulf War among American troops is attributable, at least in part, to the use of depleted uranium in that conflict. Just to remind you, if you haven't heard the show, a 1,900% increase in cancer in the Basra area of Iraq. That's right, a 19 times increase in cancer rates in the Basra area and an estimated 300% increase in congenital birth deformities. Check the show out if you haven't already, and thanks for the email, James. Okay, we'll try and get to some more of your emails tomorrow, and I do like to hear from you, Fintan@breakfornews.com. Remember also that we need your support to continue bringing you truly independent news. And if you find the show useful and the website useful, if you're a regular listener, then please do click the donate button with whatever contribution you can make to making sure we stay on the air. And of course, you can also help the show by going to neemwell.com, N-E-E-M-W-E-L-L.com, and start spending money there instead of spending it on products from the pharmaceutical industry. The money they get won't do you an awful lot of good, but the products Kathy has are effective, safe, and also enable you to help the show while doing yourself a favour. Now, I did promise a report on part one of a three-part series which aired last night on BBC Channel 2 in the United Kingdom, and it's called The Power of Nightmares. And the pre-publicity for that series says that it aims to show us how politicians have constructed an artificial war on terror, and how Al-Qaeda are nothing like the threat which they're portrayed to be in the international media. The documentary by highly regarded filmmaker Adam Curtis aired part one of the three-part series last night, and I checked it out, and it was riveting viewing. Now, part one hasn't yet got to the salacious details of the Al-Qaeda propaganda. In the first part of the series, Adam was charting the rise and rise of Islamic fundamentalism and neoconservative and Christian fundamentalism in the United States. And Curtis showed us how the Islamic fundamentalist movement gained early successes with the Islamic Revolution in Iran, which brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, and the assassination of Anwar Sadat in Egypt. Meanwhile, in the USA, neoconservatism was on the march also, in a form of backlash against the liberal agenda of the 1960s. According to Curtis, they aimed to bring back certainty and purpose to the American nation, and saw that as beneficial because it would produce social cohesion. Neoconservatism was based on the philosophy of Leo Strauss, and the movement gained its first successes when they got their own president installed, Ronald Reagan, who, after a little cajoling, set about implementing one of the aspects of the neoconservative agenda, which was to militarily bring democracy to the rest of the planet, whether they liked it or not. And Curtis showed how an essential aspect of that campaign was to portray the Soviet Union as an evil empire and a supporter of international terrorism. And Curtis highlighted a number of unexpected heroes in his story, one of them being Richard Nixon, whose détente initiatives with the Soviet Union and China were part of an alternative strategy to the neocons' agenda, one which aimed to reduce international tensions and bring an end to the era of Cold War politics. The second unexpected hero in last night's documentary was Henry Kissinger, whom Curtis portrayed as being along the similar lines of Richard Nixon. In Kissinger's case, he maintains Kissinger is a political pragmatist with a globalist outlook and a willingness to do pragmatic political business with anybody, regardless of ideological differences. Well, those are interesting angles on Nixon and Kissinger, and there are darker sides to both of those individuals, but there's some merit to what he's saying in terms of how they stood as a political opposition to the neocon agenda. And part one of Michael Curtis's three-part series ended last night with him reminding us that Islamic fundamentalism and neoconservative Christian fundamentalism weren't always at loggerheads. They teamed up together to bring about the first major victory which both of them claimed. He showed how the Reagan-era neoconservatives teamed up with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and dealt an overwhelming military defeat to the already shaky Russian political and economic system. And ironically, it was a victory which both of them would claim as their own, the Islamic fundamentalists taking full credit for having defeated the Soviet Union militarily, while at the same time, the neoconservatives in the US were claiming the defeat of Russia as their victory. And that's where Curtis left part one of the documentary hanging, with the Islamic fundamentalists and the neoconservatives having acted as allies with each other. And I'm certainly looking forward to parts two and three, and we'll be bringing you details of as we get into meatier topics, which are more of the moment. That's about it for tonight. However, we're going to go out on another track from that debut CD by Joe Dunn, Hail Caesar. This time it's Wake Up, which features Imogen Gunner on fiddle and the extremely gifted Brian O'Shea on the banjo, with Shane Rafferty also giving a real river dance punch to a dynamite track. I'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The Inside Track. I'll have a guest with me, and I do hope you can take the time to join us then. In the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
One day the world is gonna wake up. One day the world is gonna...